Hare Krishna, welcome back. And today, tonight, we're going to talk about a very interesting subject, which is how much do we actually control? And why is this interesting? Because we're talking about vows, and vows means self-discipline, spiritual strength. It also involves determination and a host of other qualities. And so the natural question is, well, how much do I have control of being able to follow the own commitments I make? And how much depends on Krishna? Or how much depends on my guru? How much depends on their mercy? How does it balance out? Is it 90% mercy, 10% my effort? Is it just that it's all mercy, that I'm so unqualified, all I can do is beg for mercy? Or is it mostly my effort, and then Krishna responds? That's what we're going to talk about. But I want to reward all of you who came early, because sometimes you come late, and I have a special prize for you for showing up early. Benevolent Bear, whole lot of love, Dr. Patrick, and Subal, and Identity Crisis are with us now. So you get to hear something funny. Are you ready? Are you listening? Are you paying attention? Good. Okay, listen to this. You may have heard this, but I want to read this again if you haven't heard it, because it's very funny and it is also very Krishna conscious. The scientist approached God and said, "Listen, we've decided we no longer need you." Now, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about. This is your reward for coming early. The scientist approached God and said, "Listen, we've decided we no longer need you. Nowadays, we can clone people, transplant hearts, and do all kinds of things that were once considered miraculous." God patiently heard him, and then he said, "All right. To see whether or not you still need me, why don't we have a man-making contest?" Good idea, right? "Okay, great," said the scientist. "Now, we're going to do this like I did in the old days with Adam," said God. Scientist said, "That's fine." And as he said, "That's fine," he bent down to scoop up a handful of dirt. "Whoa," God said, shaking his head in disapproval. "Not so fast, pal. Get your own dirt." You like that? You can chat ha 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 if you like that. Okay. I've got another one for you. Anyway, remember this next time you're talking to an atheist or a creationist. Okay. I want to show you a picture here. This is a cartoon. Can you see that picture? You don't have to read what's underneath. I'll read it. See that picture? It's a picture of a devotee. He's come home to visit his parents. He just became a devotee. He's come home to visit his parents. And he's sitting in his room, and they're not very happy that he's become a devotee. So this is what the parents say. "Your father and I just want you to know that we're behind you 100% should you decide to go back to being a dope addict." So that's the typical scenario. Anything but becoming a Hare Krishna. Go back to drugs. Go back to being as degraded as you were before. Anything. We'll help you. We'll support you. Just give this up. Okay. So now, let's begin. And it's going to be really, this class tonight, I really want you to pay attention, even take notes, and ask a lot of questions, because it's, I think it can really be, I don't want to say life-changing or transforming, but I would say on the border of life-changing and transforming. And I think for some it will be. So as I pose this question, that when we're engaging in bhakti, there's this concept that we see in the prayers of great devotees, the concept of, I'm not qualified for Krishna consciousness. I'm not even, what to speak of, qualified to achieve it. I'm not even qualified to practice it. And so there are many prayers like that. I don't want to list all the prayers, but there are prayers that indicate, the devotee indicates, he's praying to Krishna, that I don't have any qualification to love you. I don't even have the qualification to practice bhakti. I don't even have the desire to do it. So they're stating their case. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that, my Lord, if you examine me, you'll find I have no qualities. No qualities, no good qualities, no qualification. So this is a mood that you see in prayers of great devotees, which may bring you to the conclusion, well, if we have no qualifications to practice bhakti, if we have no good qualities, then whatever we're able to achieve in bhakti must be due to the mercy of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. Otherwise, if I don't have any qualification, how can I do it? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prays to the Lord. He said, please don't judge me. Because if you judge me, you won't find anything good about me. Then you'll want to punish me. So I need your mercy. Just like if you committed a crime, you go to court, and the sentence for your crime might be life imprisonment. So you plead to the judge for mercy. And if the judge is merciful, he can reduce the sentence. He can reduce the fine in any way he wants. So mercy indicates that you're receiving something that you don't deserve, something positive that you don't deserve. You deserve to be in prison your entire life, but the judge lets you off. Or another example might be that somebody helps you for no reason. They help you. They put you through school, or one of your relatives helps you, and you really haven't done anything for them. You don't have such a great relationship. There was a show when I was growing up. It was called The Millionaire. And then on this show, each episode was about a person who was given $1 million. There was a millionaire, a man who was a millionaire, and he would pick somebody to give $1 million, and then each week that episode would follow what would happen, how that life of that person would change after they had $1 million. And that was many years ago, so $1 million is probably like 10 million today, or at least 5 million. So there's this idea of mercy that I don't have any qualification, and then someone just gives me something I don't deserve. And if Krishna were to apply justice to my case, because my past is sinful, I would have no chance of entering the path of bhakti. And that may make one believe, consider, or think that our own effort is really of no value, or little value, if at all of any value, maybe little value. And it's really dependent on Krishna's mercy. That's one point of view. Another point of view is that Krishna won't give his mercy unless we make an effort. Yeyatam mam prapadyante. As they approach me, I reward accordingly. I am situated in everyone's heart. Ishvara sarvabhutanam. I'm directing the wanderings of all living entities according to what they want. I give remembrance. Apohanam. I'm in the heart, and for me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So there's this idea that, well, it depends on me, because according to what I want, then I get the energy, I get the strength. And if I don't make the effort, just like there's so many living entities in this world, some are devotees, some aren't, that means the ones who are making the effort. And that the more I try, the more effort I put in, the more strict I am with myself, the more self-disciplined I am, the more I become Krishna conscious. I can't just sit down like Prabhupada said, Krishna spoke to Arjuna to get him angry. Say, why would he want to get him angry? Well, he's a Kshatriya and he wasn't angry. He didn't want to fight. So you can't be a Kshatriya without some anger, some impetus to fight. So Prabhupada said, Krishna spoke to Arjuna to to get him angry so he would fight. And he said, you know, Arjuna wanted to sit down. He didn't want to do anything. And Prabhupada said, no, it's not the principle of bhakti that Krishna does everything and you just sit down. So we have these two sides where you could think, well, it all depends on me. And if I do everything, then Krishna will click in and he'll help. Or you could look at the other way and say, what can I do? I'm useless. Everything's done by Krishna anyway. It's all his mercy, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, your mercy is everything to me. I can't do anything without your mercy. So we have this other concept that it's all mercy and really we can't do much. Maybe we could desire, but really can't do much. So how do we adjust? Well, first thing I like to say, both things are true. It's just a question of balancing them. And how this was balanced was in the pastime of Damodar, when Mother Yasoda tried to tie Krishna up. And you all know the story. Krishna was a naughty boy. And so he was so naughty, Mother Yasoda decided, I'm going to punish him so he'll never do this again. So he was creating mischief. So she thought, I'll tie him up, and then he can't create mischief and he'll learn his lesson. So she went to tie him up, but the rope was too short. She went and got more rope, and the rope was too short. She couldn't figure out what was going on. She went to get more rope, same problem. And then she started borrowing rope from all the neighbors. So she had a huge length of the rope, and it was still two fingers too short. And then she just was exasperated. She didn't know what was happening. And then finally Krishna agreed to be bound by her. And so in the commentary on this verse, I don't know who it was, but one of the spiritual masters, great spiritual masters, commented on this, said the two fingers that it was short represented, who knows what it represented. Anyone out there in the Krishna.com land know what those two fingers represent in that story? The rope was two fingers too short, and each finger represents something. Who knows? Anybody? It didn't represent a whole lot of love, but indirectly it might have. Okay. Doesn't seem like anyone knows. Therefore, I must tell you. One of the fingers represented effort. And one of the fingers represented mercy. So first we saw Yasoda was making the effort. She was trying to tie up Krishna. Well, love and devotion, in this case, it really that finger really represented endeavor. Benevolent Bear was saying, well, the two fingers represented love and devotion. This particular, what this point is illustrating is that Mother Yasoda is making the effort. Right? She's trying to tie Krishna up. It doesn't work. She gets more rope. Doesn't work. Gets more rope. She's continually making this effort. And then at a certain point, Krishna says, okay, I will allow her to tie me up. And that represents mercy. So we require effort and mercy. And without effort, Krishna may not show his mercy to us. So they both go together. Now, very interesting point to consider. Krishna says, I'm situated in everyone's heart, which in itself is quite amazing, if you actually think about it. Like in every one of our hearts, Krishna's there. He's sitting there. So the Christians say that Jesus is knocking at the door and you have to open the door and let him in. And then if you let him in, you'll be purified, you'll become free from your sins, and you'll go back to heaven. Or you'll go to heaven. But Vaishnavas teach something different. They teach that Krishna is not knocking, and you don't have to open the door. They teach that Krishna is already there. Now, according to Krishna philosophy, when you allow Jesus in your heart, as I mentioned, you become purified, become free from the reactions to your sinful activities, and you become uplifted, become purified. So, based on that philosophy, one might think, well, if I don't have to open the door, if Krishna's already there, then why am I not becoming purified? Because he's situated in my heart. Anyone of you out there ever think like that? I mean, if you haven't, think about it now. That's kind of an interesting idea, isn't it? Krishna's in our heart, but he can be in our heart and hiding, so to speak. Just like there was a story where, I forget who it was, someone was looking for Krishna and Krishna wanted to hide from him. Was it Kamsa? And Krishna had a plan. He said, well, I think I know how to hide from him. I'll go inside his heart and he'll never find me there. Because he's not a devotee. He won't look there for me. So there is this concept that Krishna can hide in the heart, hide from us, like he's hiding from the atheist. Although he's situated in the heart, he's hiding from those who don't look towards him. And Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, I'm in the heart, but if you don't hear me, you'll be lost if you neglect me. So a lot of people don't hear Krishna, although he's in the heart. So our concept is different than the Christian concept. He can be in the heart, but we cannot be purified by that. So why is Krishna in the heart, and how does Krishna act from within the heart, and how does that relate to what we're talking about? I'll tie it together. Stay with me. Stay focused, and you'll understand everything. So it's explained in the scripture, it's explained in Bhagavad Gita and other places. Why is Krishna in the heart? Who knows? Why is he there in the first place? Because in the spiritual world, Krishna does not exist within the heart. He accompanies us in the material world, in the heart. Why? Why is he in the heart? And you might say, well, he's there to guide us back to him. True. But all kinds of people don't want to go back to him. So why is he in their heart? Anybody know? Ishvara sarva bhutanam ridesha arjuna tishtiti. I'm in the heart of every living entity. What does Krishna say? Anyone know that verse? Krishna says, I'm in the heart of every living entity. Ishvara sarva bhutanam ridesha arjuna tishtiti. Ramayan sarva bhutani yantra rudrani maya. That means he's guiding. But it doesn't mean he's guiding us to him. Interesting, isn't it? He's in the heart, but not necessarily guiding us to him. So, what's he doing then? Matra smritir garam gyanam apohanam cha means Krishna's helping us remember or forget, or giving us knowledge. What is he helping us remember or forget? Why is he there? What do we need to remember? Prabhupada explains, and it is explained in other places, that in every life we have desire, aspirations. We're working towards something. Just like right now, we all have so many aspirations. We all have a certain kind of consciousness and a certain kind of focus. And we're going in a certain direction. And what if we died tomorrow? What would happen to that consciousness? What would happen to all the desires, all the things we want to achieve? Do you think they just go away? They don't. Interesting, and I'll tell you a story to illustrate this. Really wonderful story. I don't know if I told you this before, but if I did, it's worth telling you again. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a story about Daksha. Prajapati Daksha. And Prajapati Daksha offended Lord Shiva. He offended Lord Shiva's wife, Sati. And because of that offense, a battle ensued, and finally Daksha apologized. He asked for forgiveness. But it is said he didn't fully apologize. And why is this interesting? In his next life, he again took birth as a Prajapati Daksha. Prajapati means progenitor. And he had many sons. He gave birth to many sons, and he wanted these sons to follow him and be progenitors, to populate the world. That was his service. Narada Muni came to those sons and preached to them and said, you shouldn't get married, you should remain single. Your life will be simpler, and you can execute your spiritual life without any obstacle whatsoever. Just keep your life simple. So they did that. And Daksha got so upset that he offended Narada Muni. He actually cursed him, that he couldn't stay in one place more than 3 days. So it's explained that because Daksha did not fully forgive Lord Shiva, he forgave him but not fully, he still carried this revenge within him. This mentality continued. He didn't purify himself entirely. So in his next life, it carried over and he committed offense to Narada Muni. Interesting to see how it carries over. So I was making the point that if, for example, we left our body today, our desires, our aspirations, whatever our consciousness is, it's going to continue. What am I trying to achieve in this life? We're going to forget that when we take our next body. We're going to forget that. But Krishna has a record of that. So when Krishna says, I give remembrance, what he's doing is reminding us. Do you remember in your last life you wanted to achieve this? And then he impels us through that remembrance to continue in that same consciousness, in that same mood. Now, that's not good if what you want to achieve is not on the spiritual plane. That will continue your material consciousness. So Krishna does that for those who are not Krishna conscious, or those who are not on the spiritual platform. They remember their material desires. So what is Krishna doing? You say, why would Krishna do that? You give up your body, you can't remember the consciousness you had in your last life. So wouldn't it be better to forget it and start over again and perhaps develop a better consciousness? No, but because you want that, desire is unfulfilled. So Krishna helps you by reminding you. And then you start doing the same thing again. Interesting, isn't it? So the fact that Krishna is in our heart, not as the Christians say, will we be purified, but we will be reminded, which is, of course, a good thing if we're developing Krishna consciousness, because then we'll be reminded of our spiritual desires. Now, when we become Krishna conscious, when we take to Krishna consciousness, things change. The purpose of Krishna within our heart changes, because we don't want to remember those material desires. We want to forget them. That's the process of devotional service, trying to forget them, not trying to remember them. I think, oh, I have all these material aspirations. I hope in my next life I remember them. I hope you don't think that way. And if you do think that way, you shouldn't think that way. Because our aspiration is to become detached from those things and develop our love for Krishna. So we want to forget those things. We want to forget them now, like immediately. We don't need them. They're not going to help us. Trying to overcome them, transcend them, purify them. So when we want to be Krishna conscious, then what does Krishna do? Dadami bhuti yogam tam. Dadami means I give. Ami means I. Dab to give. Dadami. And bhuti means intelligence. And yogam. We all know what yoga is. Yoga. Hello, Arati. Glad you're here. And Obama's with us. Wow. That's wonderful. Obama's becoming Krishna conscious. So Obama just joined us and Arati just joined us. So, buddhi means intelligence. That's where the word buddha comes from. It also means enlightenment. Dadami bhuti. I give intelligence. What kind of intelligence? Well, you know, Krishna could give you intelligence to come up with the most incredibly, apparently logical, scientifically based arguments to prove that he doesn't exist. He could give you that kind of intelligence. That you could come up with this, you could write phenomenally intellectual academic treatises proving that there's no God. And Krishna could give you all kinds of fantastic arguments and logic and insight into this amazingly dumb proposition. And you might even get a Nobel Prize for it, for being one of the most intelligently foolish people that ever existed. So, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam, that's a different kind of intelligence. The other kind of intelligence is Ayogam, because Yogam means to connect with Krishna. So, those who are not connecting with Krishna, they're getting Buddhi Ayogam. They're getting intelligence to like take them away from Krishna for lifetimes. So Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam apiti purvakam. Those who worship me with love and devotion, I give buddhi yogam, the intelligence, yena mam upayantite, by which they can upayantite, they can achieve me, they can come to me. That's a kind of intelligence a devotee gets, the kind of intelligence we want. Now, consider this, and I'm sure you have this experience already. Have you ever been in a state of consciousness where everything around you in this world seemed to just synchronize in a way to support your Krishna consciousness? Just seemed like everything was reminding you of Krishna, and everything you saw reminded you of a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, or you naturally saw everything philosophically, or just within your heart you felt a strong need, a strong desire to be engaged in Krishna consciousness. You just looked at it in a totally positive way, that this is what I want, this is what I need. Any of you ever felt that way? I'm sure you have. You might be humble and say, no, not really. But yeah, we've all felt that way to some degree. And have any of you ever woken up on the wrong side of the bed and had the exact opposite experience? It seemed like Krishna consciousness was like the last thing you wanted to do. Your bead bag weighed like 46,000 tons. You couldn't pick it up. Saying the Maha Mantra was the most boring, painful thing you could imagine doing. And it seemed like the entire universe was conspiring to make you forget Krishna. It was conspiring against you to throw you into the mode of ignorance. I'm sure you've had that experience also. So these are obviously extreme examples. But the point is, when Krishna says to Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam, I give intelligence, Krishna is like taking over our vehicle bodies compared to a vehicle. He's getting behind the wheel and he's driving it. And as he's driving it, he's directing us in Krishna consciousness. And he's giving us all kinds of intelligence and insight how to achieve him. Now, excuse me, if Krishna does that, and he does do that, maybe we would like him to do it more often. And we'll talk about how that can happen. But when he does that, understand what's happening is that Krishna is now we're getting Krishna's mercy, so we're able to achieve a higher state of Krishna consciousness than we could achieve on our own, because now Krishna's helping us, he's supporting us, he's directing our intelligence, he's there within us. Now, a really interesting point is if you go to the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse, such a wonderful verse. Krishna says, Ananyas chintayantomam ye jana pariupasate. To those who worship me, fixed, to those who always think of me, think of nothing else but me. Ananyas chintayantomam ye jana pariupasate. Those person who think of me and who worship me, nitya biyuktanam, they always worship me with devotion. Ananyas chintayantomam ye jana pariupasate. Tesham nitya biyuktanam. To those who are always constantly, that's what they do. They just worship me. They don't think of anything else. For them, I carry what they lack. I preserve what they have, and I carry what they lack. Now, generally, It's a nice verse, isn't it? Like Krishna will carry what you like. In other words, this verse says, you don't have to worry. I'll maintain you. And whatever you need, I will bring you. Vahami. Vahami means I will carry. So it's a very nice meditation. And typically, the understanding of this is, if you give yourself to Krishna, you don't have to worry how you'll live in this world. Krishna will take care of you. Whatever you have, he'll maintain it. Whatever you don't have, he'll take care of you. You familiar with this verse? Very nice verse. It's in the 9th chapter. I forget what number it is. Actually, I can tell you if you want to look it up. Well, I can tell you. It's 22, yes. It should be chapter 9, text 22. I believe. Yes. So, I'll tell a story, because I'm sure you love to hear stories. Stories make everything nice and interesting. There was a devotee named Arjuna Acharya. And Arjuna Acharya was very poor. In fact, he and his wife only had one piece of cloth. It was the dhoti. And so, when he went out in public, he would wear the dhoti. And when she went out in public, she would wear the dhoti. And somehow she would make it like a sari, I guess. So they couldn't both go out together because they didn't have enough clothes. They were that poor. And so when she was at home, they just were wearing some rags. And they never had any food in the house. And he would have to go out and beg food every day. And some days he wouldn't get food. So he's reading this verse in Bhagavad Gita. And in this verse, Krishna says, Vahamyaham. Vahamya means, I personally carry. I personally deliver whatever you lack. It doesn't mean that I arrange for it through the demigods or through my material energy in some way. It means I personally carry it. So he was writing a commentary on Bhagavad Gita, came to this verse, and he said, look at my condition. Krishna's not coming personally and helping me and delivering food and so forth. But the actual understanding of this verse is, if one gives one's life totally to Krishna and one totally depends on Krishna, Krishna will do that. One doesn't have to worry. So he's going through this verse and he said, that's not right. So that's not the way Krishna does it. And he made another commentary there. He said, Krishna, he'll arrange somehow, but he won't personally do it. And so what he did is he took a red pen and he crossed out Nitya Bhyuktanam Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham. He crossed those three words out in red pen. So after he did that, he told his wife that he was going out to beg. That's what he did. In that culture, Brahmins would beg. That's how they lived. That was the prescribed way for them to earn money, by begging. It was considered an honorable profession in those days. It required a lot of humility. And the Brahmins would live very simply because they could only live on what was given to them. They couldn't start a business and earn as much as they wanted or get a high-paying job. That's how they did it. So anyway, he went out begging, and it was a bad day, and he actually didn't get anything. But while he kept going and going and going, and nobody was giving. And while that was going on, a very beautiful, incredibly beautiful boy and his brother showed up at the house. And they were carrying on their head, in India, this is how they carry things. They take a stick, and the stick's on the head, and on either side of the stick, there's like a bamboo stick, or two pots, and then you put things in the pots, or two baskets, and then you carry them. So this boy, this little boy, he's carrying these big, heavy loads of grains and fruits and vegetables on his head. And he comes and he knocks on the door. And the lady, she's not dressed properly, so she just opens the door a little bit. And he says, Mata, your husband asked us to bring these groceries to you. And she's looking at this little boy carrying all these weights. And she says, oh, my husband, how so cruel to you that he's making you carry all this weight. You're so small. And then he notices he has three red lines on his chest or on his back. I think it was on his chest. And she said, what is that? At first she was saying, oh, you must be so tired, or, you know, she felt sorry for him that he was carrying the weight. And he's saying, your husband told me to do this. And she's saying, oh, my husband is so cruel that he'd make you do this. And then she sees the three lines. I said, oh, what's that? Can I help you? Or are you in pain? He said, Dan, your husband did this to me. And she felt so bad for him. She invited him in and she began to cook for him. So he sat in the courtyard while she was cooking. Of course, as you can guess, this boy, beautiful boy, was Krishna. And so Krishna, his plan was to teach Arjunacharya that he actually does personally bring everything, and he knew Arjunacharya would understand that. So while she was cooking, he left because he knew Arjunacharya was coming back and he didn't want Arjunacharya to see him. So anyway, he comes back. Arjunacharya comes back. He was begging, he has nothing. And he comes back and he sees that his wife's cooking. One story was that she was cooking and one story was that she was already eating, which was kind of astonishing because in that culture, wife never eats until the husband finishes. Anyway, as soon as her husband comes home, he asks, where did you get all this food? He said, that poor boy you sent brought it. You're so cruel. How could you make that boy bring all that food? And he said, I never sent any boy. What are you talking about? So what do you mean? This boy came. No, I didn't collect anything today. I didn't send him. No, this boy came. He said you told him to bring the food, and he had three red marks on his chest that you put, and he said you put them there. And at that moment, Arjunacharya understood that it was Krishna that had come to his house, and he just went into ecstasy, and he was, oh, Gopinath. And he told his wife, he said, do you realize that you just got the darshan of the Supreme Lord? How fortunate you are. So in this way, Krishna proved that he personally takes care of his devotee. So that's the general understanding of this verse. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, there's also another meaning, that when it says Krishna will preserve what we have and give us what we lack, it also means he'll give us the intelligence we lack. He'll give us all that we lack to become Krishna conscious. And that's amazing if you think about it, that Krishna will supply us with whatever we need to become Krishna conscious. Of course, for him to supply that, then there's the tesha nitya bhyuktanam, always engaged in worshiping me. So it fits within the context of the other verse we're discussing, where didami buddhi yogam tam, I give intelligence to those who are always worshiping me in love and devotion. So originally I was posing that question, well, is it effort or is it Krishna? And I hope that you can see from these verses that it's both. Now I want to tell a story. This is really interesting, so pay attention. And if you're chatting away about your cats or whatever, pay attention. Okay? Because this is important. I joined the Hare Krishna movement. We're in now in 2009. I joined 39 years ago. So it's taken me 39 years to figure this out, so you get the benefit. Speed it up for you. So, the effort. How much control do we even have of the effort? Because sometimes we might feel like, well, do I really have that much control? How much choice do I have? I mean, do I really have that much choice? So one time, Srila Prabhupada was asked, how do we become sincere? Like, what can I do to achieve the level of sincerity? What are the stages? How do I approach it, or how do I get there? How does one come to that position? And what he was thinking is it's a process. And Prabhupada said, just be sincere. How do you become sincere? By being sincere. In other words, Prabhupada was making the point that we have control of the degree of our own sincerity, the level of sincerity. It's our personal choice. Sincerity is a decision we make freely. It's not that, well, if I do this and that, then Krishna will bestow his mercy, and then I can become sincere. No. So, that's one side of the equation, that we have choice on a fundamental level. We have choice. And that choice is to be sincere in Krishna consciousness or not to be sincere. We have that choice. It's not in anyone else's hand. We can't give that responsibility to anybody else. Neither can we blame anybody if we don't have it. Sometimes we want to do that. Well, I would be more Krishna conscious, but it's this problem or that problem or this person's doing this or so on. Here in Prabhupada saying it's not dependent on anything other than your own sincerity, because Krishna consciousness is ultimately dependent on our own sincerity. Just like Krishna says, Nahi kalyana krit kaschid durgatin tatta gacchati. My dear Arjuna, one who does good is never overcome by evil. So who does good? How do we do good? Well, that is dependent on our sincerity. Nahi kalyana, auspicious activity. So you could say that being sincere is synonymous with performing auspicious activity, in the sense that it is our sincerity that brings us to perform that auspicious activity. It is our desire. And that, nobody can really take that away from it. It's always a choice to be sincere or not to be sincere. So this is a very, very important point. But the other side of the equation is the results we get in Krishna consciousness are not in our hands. We can't say, okay, I will chant 100 rounds and therefore Krishna will have to give me the result. And I will tell a story to illustrate this. It's a really nice story. There was a devotee, this is an unfortunate situation, but there was a devotee who actually rejected Prabhupada. There were very few devotees that ever rejected Prabhupada, but one devotee did. And he took shelter of another guru who did not have faith in Prabhupada, did not agree with Prabhupada, did not agree with the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta. And one of the teachings of this guru was that you should chant at least 64 rounds a day. Ideally, you should chant like 300 rounds or 100 rounds or whatever. You should just chant all day. Because if you don't, you won't be Krishna conscious. So this devotee who left Prabhupada wrote Prabhupada, told him why he was leaving, and then mentioned this, some of the teachings that he was following, and this was one of them. Kind of a justification, I'm leaving Krishna consciousness because the real teaching is that we should chant constantly, and that's what I'm going to be doing. And the real teaching is if you don't do this, you can't be Krishna conscious. And if you do this, then you'll get prema. And Prabhupada read that, and he said, you cannot force Krishna to give you prema, even if you're chanting through, you know, I don't know what Prabhupada said. By chanting 100 rounds a day, you cannot force Krishna to give you prema. Interesting, right? In other words, we have the choice to be sincere, but we can't force Krishna to produce any result within us. That's up to him. Now, there's another story I heard last night. Really nice story. Shrutakirti is here in Alachua. He had a program last night, and he told the following story. I believe Prabhupada was in Japan, and he wanted to start a temple in Japan. Probably must have been 1972. In 1972, maybe there were 30 temples in the world, so every time we opened a new temple, it was a really big thing. You know, nowadays, you would say it's a big thing if you go to a remote part of the world where there are no devotees, no temples, and you open a temple. But in those days, every place, most countries didn't have temples, so it was a big. Every temple we opened was kind of a big thing. So anyway, when they were in Japan, Prabhupada said, we need to open a temple here. Would anyone volunteer to do that? And Prabhupada said, whoever opens a temple in Japan, Lord Chaitanya will personally come and take them back to Godhead. Now, just understand that statement. It's not easy to go back to Godhead. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said, if you have an ounce of material desire, an ounce, little desire, you have to come back and take another birth. He one time said, if you just have a desire to eat a sweet ball, you have to come and take birth again. And if you study the scripture, you'll see there are so many stages you must go through before you come to the stage of prema, pure love of God. And if you don't achieve that, then you won't realize your eternal relationship with Krishna. You won't realize who you are. And then you won't be able to enter Krishna's pastimes. And you have to go through so many other stages. And so many of those other stages only come after you're completely purified of material desire. That's when you develop to the other stages that are still stages below love of God, still stages below what you have to achieve to realize your position in the eternal pastimes of Krishna. And now here Prabhupada says, open a temple in Japan and Lord Chaitanya will personally come and take you back to Godhead. So that's quite a result, isn't it? That's like, you know, couldn't get much better than that. Just open a temple in Japan and you get that. So that's how mercy works. Now, there's another story. Once a devotee wanted to do a parikrama, which means a walking pilgrimage around the Ganga. I don't know how far the Ganga goes, but I think it must go like 1,000 miles. He wanted to do that. He was a sannyasi, and he asked his guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, for permission to do that, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta didn't want to give permission to do that, for him to do that, but he did it anyway. And when he came back, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was upset with him, and he took away his sannyas. So it's not that you can produce a result just if you do something which seems to be Krishna conscious or seems to be austere, that you're automatically guaranteed the result will come. No. That's up to Krishna. That is definitely up to Krishna. And the guru. That's the mercy side of the equation. And sometimes we can do something which will undo the mercy, which we think, well, I'll do this austerity and it will produce a good result. There was a devotee once, and he went to Mayapur. Every year in Mayapur we have a festival, and devotees from all over the world come. And so he came, and he wanted to chant 64 rounds a day. And to do that, he didn't want to associate with any other devotees, didn't want to engage in small talk and this and that. So he actually built himself a tree house. He was living in the tree, and he was chanting 64 rounds a day. And it came to Prabhupada's attention several times. And maybe the third time or fourth time the devotees mentioned it, and Prabhupada said it was just a personal desire. It was his own personal desire. It wasn't the desire of his spiritual master. So you can't, so you can say, well, I'll just chant and it will produce a certain result. No, it's not like that. The result is dependent on Krishna. So we make the effort, we make the proper effort. We have control. We can make a choice. Now, if you're in the mode of ignorance, it's harder to make a choice because the mode of ignorance conditions us more. So stay out of that mode of ignorance, because when you're in that mode, it becomes very hard to choose. You kind of lose your willpower. But we make a choice. We have control of that choice. We make a decision. And then Krishna reciprocates with that choice. Either the choice to forget him, to enjoy independently of him, the choice to engage in fruit of activities so we can be elevated through the Vedic process, the choice to merge, to become one with him, or the choice to compete with him, or the choice to serve him. And then Krishna, as the super soul, sets into motion a whole process to help us achieve that. So with our sincerity, if we make the proper choice, then Krishna kicks in as the intelligence. And then it becomes really easy to become Krishna conscious. It's just like, instead of using our own intelligence, Krishna is guiding our intelligence, and he's guiding it towards him. And so we just start seeing things in a much more Krishna conscious way. I know a lot of times in my own devotional service, sometimes when I'm not Krishna conscious, I'm seeing things in the wrong way. I'm seeing things in a way which is taking me further away from Krishna. And I always pray in that situation, Srila Prabhupada, Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, Krishna, my worshipful Didi, Radha Krishna, you could change my consciousness in a second. You can do what I can't do. And I'm trying to change it, but somehow or other I've done something wrong, committed some offense, or I've chanted improperly, or whatever it is, and my consciousness is not in the right place. I'm thinking in the wrong way, the wrong attitude, I'm looking at things in the wrong way. And I know in a second you could turn that around. And so often when I pray that way, I find very shortly I'm thinking in a different way. And all of a sudden I'm thinking in a way that's nourishing my Krishna consciousness. And I really didn't do it. I was really helpless in that, in doing that. And Krishna did it. He just, from within, shifted my attitude, my view, the way I see things, the way I deal with people. And that way of seeing and thinking and feeling was nourishing my Krishna consciousness. How does this relate to vows? I think you can understand how it relates to vows. You want to commit to something. You need partnership with Krishna to commit, to be able to do it. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, Krishna talks about the worship of demigods. And he's saying, in the 9th chapter, and he's saying, when people worship demigods, they're actually, that worship is meant for me, but they don't know that. So they're worshiping the demigods. It's the wrong kind of worship. It should be going to me. And then he says, I make the faith of the demigod worshiper strong. So Krishna from within the heart of the demigod worshiper is giving the demigod worshiper determination to worship the demigod. So if he's doing that for the demigod, and we want to follow a vow, we want to be determined in our bhakti, won't he do that for us? And we could say that if Krishna doesn't give us that strength, that intelligence, we won't be able to keep our vow. Because Krishna will give us the intelligence how to keep the vow. He'll give us the faith and the determination as well. So there's this teamwork where we are making an effort, but we understand our effort has its limits. Our effort is confined to our choice and our willingness to follow the instructions. And then at a certain point, we have to leave that open for Krishna to act. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he addresses this question. And he said, because some people think that they really don't have much free will. They think, well, Krishna says we're all conditioned and we're all forced to act. You can find that in Bhagavad Gita, we're forced to act. If I'm forced to act, then what kind of will do I have? And why should I be responsible for the way I act if I'm forced to do it? And so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, no, Krishna is telling you how to act in Bhagavad Gita. He's saying, these are the pravittim cha and the rittim cha. This is the pravitti. This is the right thing to do. Or these are things you should do. And nivritti. And these are things you should not do. And so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, why would Krishna tell us this is what to do and this is what not to do if you don't have any choice? It wouldn't make any sense. Because you can't do it anyway. Then it even makes it worse. Now you're not following Krishna's instructions. He's telling you what to do. But your hands are tied. You can't do it. No, he's saying because your hands are not tied, you can do it. You do have that freedom. So understanding that we make the effort as best we can. And then we leave the result of that effort to Krishna. And Prabhupada says, once Krishna kicks in and reciprocates with that effort and desire, it becomes very easy. Tesham nitya byuktanam yoga kshema vahamyam. I carry what you lack. So if you think, well, maybe I can't follow this vow, it's going to be difficult. Krishna, if you're engaged in Krishna's service wholeheartedly, if that's what you want, then Krishna Bahamyaham, he can carry what you lack. Somehow or other, you can do something which normally you would not be able to do because Krishna is helping you. It's a partnership. Devotional service, it's always a partnership. You're never on your own. If you try to do it on your own, you can't do it. You're going to fail. It's always a partnership. So, now, there's 4 minutes left. That was a mouthful. I had to get that out. I think it's important. And I haven't been following anything you've been saying. And I don't even know if you've been asking any questions. I don't know if it was worth following anything you're saying. But now, this is your big chance. Surfer Bob, Foot Dust, Whole Lot of Love, Subal. If you want to ask a question, Benevolent Bear. We have quite a group here. If you want to join the chat, you don't have to come up with a novel and interesting and creative name. You could actually use your real name. That'd be pretty creative also. That might be a unique offering to use your real name. So if you have any questions on this subject, please ask now. Okay. We're going through the chat and we're looking to see if there actually was a question. Krishna, you know, he's so nice, he wants to help us. And why should we make it harder on ourselves by not allowing him to help us? It's like, it's so stupid, isn't it? Sometimes we engage in bhakti in such a way that we don't even want Krishna to help us. We're afraid. You know, maybe this sounds stupid, but some devotees, and you may be one of them, on some level, are afraid Krishna might help me too much. I might go to him too soon, too fast. I might get too close to him. Like, you know, let's say a man and a woman are going on a date, and maybe the man really wants to get married, and the woman's like, wait a minute, we're going too fast, too soon, too fast. Let's just take this one step at a time. Sometimes we feel that way in our relationship with Krishna. We talk about surrender, trust, faith. And say, wait a minute, maybe this is too much, too fast. I don't know if I'm ready for this relationship. And then if we think that way, then we're holding back. So Krishna's going to hold back in terms of the inspiration and intelligence he's giving us to approach him, because we're holding back. As they approach me, I approach them. As they surrender, I surrender to them. So in the commentaries on this verse, Krishna says, I maintain what you have and I carry what you lack, all the commentaries say, when you fully give yourself to Krishna, when you fully depend on him, that's when he does it. And then the commentaries say, Krishna likes doing that. It's not like Krishna's burden to do that. He actually wants to do it. Isn't that amazing? You may think, well, I don't want to burden Krishna with all my problems and have him maintain me. No, Krishna says, I want to do that. I like to do that. You're my devotee. Because you are not trying to maintain yourself. You're not worshiping the demigods. You're not praying to me for material things. I want to come and do that because I have so much attraction for you, so much affection. Okay. So, isn't that wonderful? How much Krishna will help us? So, the moral of the story tonight is, tap into Krishna's help by showing him you want it. And have that confidence that Krishna can help you do things. Particularly now we're talking about commitments, desire, vows and commitments. He can help you by giving you the enthusiasm, the intelligence, the energy, the insight, the determination to follow those. Okay, it looks like there are no questions tonight because everyone's talking about dogs and broccoli and cats somehow or other. I've inspired you to talk about that. I don't know how I did it. I must have special Shakti. But it was nice talking to you. And please come back next week for further discussion on this important topic. If you just learn self-discipline, then it's so much, it's going to be so much easier to master the process of Krishna consciousness, learning how to focus on what you want to achieve, follow through on your commitments, remain true to your vows, then everything will be wonderful. Okay, Hare Krishna, and we will see you next week, and have a good week, and Hare Bol.